Thanks so much for coming out. I want to thank Andrea for hosting this evening. I want to thank Aliza and Benji for right on time for conceiving of this and making this happen. This is very exciting. I've felt remiss the last 2-3 years. I've been less involved in women's shiurim than in the past. So I really want to thank the Rubens for making sure this happens. I thank Jessica for getting the word out. Tonight's shiur is dedicated to L'ilui Nishmas, Andrea's father and grandparents, Yosef Yoel ben Chaim, Chaim ben Yechiel, and Bluma Bas Yosef, whose yard sites are tonight and over the next couple of days. And as we head towards this extraordinary week, the week of Malchus, and the week that every year would take us, bring us from Yom Yerushalayim, to Zman Matan Torah Seinu. And this year, Tav Shinayim Ches, this week has not just been commemorative, but we've been watching the Prakim of Tehillim sort of fall into place and become realized before our eyes. So it's a really an extraordinary schus to live in these times. And it's an opportunity. Rav Shlomo is coming knocking. And he's making himself remarkably noticeable. And as we know from Mashir HaShirim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes knocking, it's up to us to answer the door. And we answer the door through drawing closer to him in so many different ways. And learning about Shabbos, in a sense, is a perfect storm. Talmud Torah to learn HaKadosh Baruch Hu's wisdom is one of the ways we draw close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Shabbos is an incredibly powerful, unusually powerful tool for drawing close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rav writes very movingly, in one of the Yahrzeit Rashi spoke, and now is published, very movingly, about how Shabbos and Yom Tov are both times when we have greater access, greater intimacy with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that metaphorically speaking, and to an extent literally, Yom Tov is when we visit HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his home. In the days of Beis HaMikdash, we Jews had a mitzvah. We merchant will soon once again. The mitzvah Li'il Regel, to go visit HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, on his turf. Shabbos is when, so to speak, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to visit us in our own home. And there's a certain majesty, and there's a certain level that you're only going to have when you're, so to speak, visiting HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his office, metaphorically speaking. But there's even greater intimacy, and there's something almost cozier about the notion of having an increased Gilu Shechina in our own home. That's part of what's captured by the very famous description that Gemara gives of Malachim that come to visit us as the family comes together on a Friday night after shul. So part of what that Gemara is capturing is this idea that there's an increased Gilu Shechina. There's increased, certainly, opportunity. There's a potential for increased Gilu Shechina of the course of Shabbos. And as the Gemara indicates, it's a question of, have we prepared ourselves for it? Have we prepared our homes for it? Have we prepared ourselves for that opportunity? The potential is there. Either we answer the door, we answer the knock, or we don't. And that's an opportunity that comes around every single Shabbos. And it highlights also the notion of the value of preparing for Shabbos, which is a lot of what we're focused on. It sometimes seems very technical, the notion of preparing for Shabbos, or we'll roll up our sleeves in a couple of moments and get down to nuts and bolts of setting things up and what happens before Shabbos. Right? I knew we spoke about last time, we'll talk about it on Shabbos. It's important to put, and the details are incredibly important, and their importance is magnified when we realize the extent of the iceberg, when we realize that we're looking at incredibly important details, which echo and which express deep, deep, deep ideas. And it's through accessing, that's part of the way, as you know, the joy and the meaningfulness of halacha in general is that it's specifically through care about details that we access something far larger than details. It's through care about the details of practice that we access the majesty and the grandeur of a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Sometimes people think, you know, the big picture items just have to be big picture-ish. That's part of the overall philosophy of halacha, is that we touch the biggest picture items and the biggest themes in a relation with the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's writ large, the way in is paradoxically through careful, being careful about the details. But being careful about the details blended with an appreciation of the ideas. When we can blend halacha and machshava, when we're careful about diktuk b'halacha with an appreciation of what it means and with whom we get to have a relationship through these details, that's the recipe that we're looking for in halacha in general, and Shabbos in particular, when we really have the opportunity, so to speak, to invite HaKadosh Baruch Hu into our home, to have greater the opportunity for greater Gili Shechina in our home than any other time of the week. It's worth preparing for, and we realize that the value, it sort of like multiplies the meaningfulness of every little detail, every extra step that we do do things right is worth worlds when you realize the magnitude of what it is that we're bringing in. And the halachas we're about to discuss of hot food on Shabbos, so it's actually remarkable. It's one of the areas in Shulchan Aruch, one of the few areas in Shulchan Aruch, where there's a philosophical note sounded on the page of Shulchan Aruch. The last, or sometimes some sections will be sort of the first, the open introduction. Here's the last line. Siman Reishon Gimel, chapter 253 in Shulchan Aruch, happens to be where the halachas we're going to be discussing come from. And at the closing line, you open the Shulchan Aruch, Ramah, the closing line is to appreciate that what we're trying to accomplish that is there are a lot of details in terms of how we're going to make sure to have hot food on Shabbos. The Ramah says, don't forget that the goal of warm food on Shabbos is the goal of enjoying Shabbos. And that's what our Torah Shabbat teaches us, is Shabbos is meant to be a time of joy. Not like the Karaites who thought Shabbos is meant to be cold and dark and who misinterpreted Chumash. Shabbos is meant to be a time of incredible joy, a time of incredible enjoyment, blended with self-control. That really captures, as I was saying before, Shabbos in particular captures that blend. That it's specifically through self-control and self-discipline that we can get to deeper enjoyment and we get to deeper meaningfulness. So that's sort of the mindset with which we enter into the halachas of specific all the areas of Hilchos Shabbos. It's the halachas of hot food on Shabbos. Ramah makes this point. This is sort of the expression of we're going to do it right. We're going to do it technically right, and the goal is the goal of Oneg Shabbos. One other just sort of general point I would sound before jumping into details is the importance of asking shilas. That's true over the next couple of minutes, but it's also true even more so beyond this evening. In case you're worried, there are so many details, how am I going to possibly absorb it all? So hopefully, I hope to be clear, and I do have not a handout, not a source sheet, but an outline that I'll pass around in a moment, which hopefully will help us to sort of organize ideas. But no one should feel anxious that I'm going to miss details of what I'm going to do. Everyone's going to miss details. I could not possibly encompass all the details over the next 40 minutes or so, but that's fine. The goal is to sort of lay out a framework for thinking so that we have an understanding of how things work. I hope to discuss a number of specific cases, to walk out with practical approaches, and hopefully, most importantly of all, is to begin a conversation. That's what the Rav and I are here for. Sometimes people worry that I'm bothering them if I call with questions. Nothing could be further from the truth. That's what we're here for. Please use the phone. I actually realized on the way here, I was thinking of the car on the way here, I realized I should have put my cell phone number, maybe both of our cell phone numbers, on the bottom of the handout. I trust you have access to those numbers. Please use them. Catch us, call us, text us, whatever it is. But this is just the beginning of a conversation. And the goal is, hopefully, to be more educated consumers about halacha in general, about Hilchos Shabbos in particular, and to get us both to address specific issues and also sort of to get us thinking, to get the juices flowing, and hopefully there'll be an increased number of conversations, questions and conversations over the next couple of days and weeks and months. So Rabbi Neuberger, last time, if I could trouble you to hand these out. I understand that the Rav last time, I understand that Moshe Tzvi opened up this series a little bit of what we did just now, so with the perspective on the meaningfulness of Shabbos and how the halacha and hashkafa intertwine. And there is Baruch Hashem a lot to say about that. And that the Rav last year focused on Friday afternoon. How to set up the kitchen for Shabbos, right? And that's sort of with the focus on when halachic terminology we call Shahir, how you can and cannot leave things stacked and set as Shabbos comes in. What I want to focus on now is to look at Shabbos morning and to look at, there are a lot of, whoever put together the blurb that went into the announcement sheet was ambitious and said we were talking about both the heating and warming food on Shabbos and about making salad on Shabbos. Right, so I'd be more than glad to take a rain check and to discuss mashed potatoes and guacamole and cereal for the baby and whatever different stages, whatever it is, I'd be glad to talk about that at a different time. I think for tonight, let's focus on the questions of warm and hot food, how you get warm and hot food over the course of Shabbos. Some people like to start with dessert. So if you look at the outline, again, the outline is not just sort of laying out ideas, and it will become clear, hopefully, as we develop ideas in the next couple of minutes, everything will fall into place. But lots of people like to start with dessert, so let's do that right now. Section 3, the cases and points, just to sort of think about some of the different things that we might come across. So, and I do have a weakness for alliteration, I apologize. But challah chicken and cauliflower are some of the things, items you might be interested in, you have made before Shabbos started, but you're serving at Shabbos morning, and I'd love to have warm challah instead of cold challah. I'd love to have, to serve popcorn cauliflower cold doesn't really cut it. Mm-hmm. And the chicken, depending on how you made the chicken, you might also much prefer warm or hot chicken over cold. So that's sort of one set of questions, is the food's prepared beforehand, and how am I re-warming it? That's one big question. Another big question is, and again, this is different stages for different people, but the question of how you heat a baby bottle, depending on the age of the child, may just be a convenience or maybe really be a necessity, especially if you're dealing with water that's in the fridge. You have your water that's in the fridge, or perhaps you have milk that's in the fridge. It was in the fridge to stay fresh, but now I can't get it cold, so how am I getting that from cold, not to hot, but from cold to warm? And finally, this clay, I have to bring all the alliteration together. Celestial seasonings and Bigelow, different people have different tastes. Far be it from me to dictate what type of tea you like. And there actually are some Shabbos, each one has its own Shabbos issues, as an aside. Bigelow bags, you have to be careful how you rip them. If you're a Bigelow person, you know what I'm talking about. Ripping across the top is usually problematic, especially if you look at both sides of the bag. Usually you want to rip from that notch. Straight down is usually the way to go. Celestial seasonings, those who are celestial seasonings, people know that for some reason all the bags come together. So either you could make double bags, or just when the same way some people just open bottles when they buy them, just when you buy a box of tea, open it up. Takes 3 seconds, they're all separated, and then it's kosher for 7 days a week. Okay, but that's not our Shabbos issue. Our Shabbos issue is you might be able to rip the bags in advance, but you're not making the tea in advance unless you're making iced tea. So how you're making hot tea on Shabbos is a great question. So those are some of the things that come to mind. I'm warming liquids, I'm warming solids, I'm rewarming cooked foods. How does this all, what can I do, what can't I do, what I need to be aware of, what should I be preparing in advance? I think those are the questions that are on the table. So to think about those questions in an intelligent way, the first thing to realize is that there are two major pitfalls we need to avoid. If we can avoid the two pitfalls, then we're in the clear and we have no Shabbos issues. And to appreciate that, let's go back to basics for just a moment. I'm sure you're all aware the Mishnah has a list of 39 malachas that one cannot do in Shabbos. 39 overall categories of creative behavior that we as Jews refrain from over the course of Shabbos. You probably know that the list of 39, Gemara says, was probably populated by looking at the stages that the Jews went through in constructing the Mishkan, because the Torah keeps talking about not doing malacha. The Torah makes it very clear, if it's open to Chumash, it becomes very clear very quickly, especially in Chumash Shmos. There's something called malacha that you're not supposed to do on Shabbos, and it's a major issue, and it's incredibly severe. And if you do malacha on Shabbos, Ooh, are you in trouble? Kare skila, the works, it's absolutely tough. You gotta avoid malach at all costs. Unless someone's life depends on it, you're avoiding malach on Shabbos. Which just sort of heightens the mystery of what exactly is this malacha that's mentioned so many times in Chumash and never defined. And we clearly need to know what it is because the stakes are incredibly high. But this is once, so the Chacham point out, but this one time when Shabbos really appears in a very awkward way, the beginning of Parshas Vayakel. Really non sequitur, it doesn't really seem to have to do with anything else. Moshe Rabbeinu just gets up there and says, Rabosai, remember to keep Shabbos, and then just jumps into talking about, begins to teach the Jewish people about making the Mishkan. So the Gemara says, ah, there you go. That's our clue. This mysterious malacha that we're told about, this is the model. That which they're doing in to build a Mishkan is that which would be considered malacha, and therefore we need to avoid over the course of Shabbos. So that's how we get this list of 39 malachas, 39 different creative activities that the Jews making the Mishkan, the men and women, as the Chumash stresses, who made the Mishkan, engaged in, of the course, all the different stages of working with the wood and the leather and the this and that, all the different parts that ultimately make up the Mishkan, 39 different types of creative activity, 39 malachos, and those, it's and the Mishnah makes it clear that it's not just a problem to do the way they actually did in the Mishkan, but those create sort of categories, ideas, groups of activities. So, avos malachos. So one of the avos malachos is bishul, or ofet, not to cook and bake. That's one, and that's obviously a big one. What that means, to make a long story short, I can't use heat to do a couple of different things. I can't use heat to render inedible food edible, and I can't use heat to make cold water hot. The Mishnah is talking about cooking water, but water is perfectly drinkable cold. I mean, sometimes maybe you may need to boil it for health purposes, but water is drinkable cold. So Rambam points out that when we think about cooking on Shabbos, there's cooking of food and there's cooking of water. There's also cooking of non-food items, wax and things like that. That's not really relevant to us right now. If you have a yen to melt wax on Shabbos, please wait till after Shabbos, but that's not really our focus. We're talking here, talking in the kitchen. So you can't cook. To cook food means to make it edible. I told you, before it was raw, and through heat, it's now no longer raw. And then there's cooking water, which is just heating the water. If I take chicken, raw chicken, and I heat it, but that's not long enough to actually do anything to it. It's still raw, so I haven't cooked it. There's no reason I would want to do that on Shabbos. It would be mukzah, but that's not cooking. If I take raw chicken, and I stick it in the oven, and then a half hour later, it's no longer raw, I've cooked that chicken. I took food, and using heat, I made it edible. That's type one. Type two is I took cold water, or we would paskin cold soup, cold liquid in general, I made it hot, even though it may have been drinkable beforehand, or in the case of soup, it was already made into soup. But when we talk about liquids, cooking isn't just making it, taking it from raw to cooked. Cooking could also be simply taking it from cold to hot. And that's why... The first thing you want to think about when you're warming your challah or warming your kugel or warming your chicken, you definitely don't want to violate malacha d'oraisa of cooking, of bishul. So to take raw dough and put it in the oven, we know that's a malacha of bishul, it's ofa, because I'm taking raw dough and I'm bringing it to a state of cookedness, or bakedness. Right? But if I take challah, it's already done. I bake the challah on Erev Shabbos, or I bake the challah on Sunday afternoon, whatever your schedule looks like. I bake the challah Tuesday night at 2 in the morning, whatever it is. The challah is baked, but it's cold, or whatever. It's room temperature, sitting out in a Ziploc bag on the counter. Now, I want to take that challah and warm it. See, if the challah is fully baked, warming it is not a problem of bishul. If the chicken is fully done, if the kugel is fully done, if the popcorn cauliflower is fully done from before Shabbos, so that's not bishul. I'm sure you've heard. Some of you may have heard the term that the halachic term is ein bishul acher bishul. There's no cooking after cooking, meaning it's already cooked. I mean, I can rewarm it, but if we're dealing with solid food, cooking means making it unraw. Well, it already is unraw. It's already bread. It's no longer dough. It's already cooked cauliflower. It's no longer raw cauliflower. So then, to warm it is fine. To warm it is fine, as in. To warm solid food that's already cooked is not a problem of bishul. We've avoided any issur d'oraisa. If it's liquid, if Like to say, well, I have the soup. The soup was fully done from before Shabbos. I want to warm it up Shabbos morning. That you can't do. Why? Because when you talk about liquids, there's a second way to look at Bishul, and that's, as I said, water or we possibly other liquids as well. Is even if it's already done, but if I'm taking it from a cold top, that too qualifies as Bishul. That's why the principle of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, that cooking is not an issue if it's already done, is only true if it's solid and not if it's liquid. To reheat liquids on Shabbos, you're playing. I was about to say you're playing with fire. You're potentially in violation of a melacha d'oraisa of bishul. So that's why I want to take the stuff out of the kitchen, out of the fridge on a Shabbos morning and warm it up for my Shabbos morning suit, and we'll stick it on top of the chalm pot. We'll talk in a moment about where I can stick things if I want to warm them. The first thing you got to avoid is make sure you're not violating a melacha of bishul, which means A, it's fully cooked, and B, hopefully it is solid. We'll get to, there are cases, if it's liquid but still warm, took it off the fire, put it back on, that's not a problem of bishul. But if it's a liquid that already cooled down to room temperature, to reheat it would be a problem of bishul. So that's why if in case you want to follow along on the outline, you don't have to, if you like to. So item number one is you want to avoid the d'oraisa of cooking, and there are your risk factors. Now what you have to ask yourself, is it fully cooked? To take food that's not fully cooked, no matter where you plan to put it, it doesn't matter if you have on top of your chalm pot, you have whatever system you have. If it's not fully cooked, that's problematic, because that's a malacha d'oraisa of bishul. A blech doesn't help for bishul. A plata doesn't help for bishul. Nothing will help you for bishul. The only thing that helps you for bishul, avoid bishul. Make sure it's solid and fully cooked. Or just put in a place where it can't even get hot. Okay, that's not usually very exciting. So that's number one. I'd be glad to take questions before we move on. But let me just sort of sketch out where we're heading, and then I'd be glad to stop for questions, and then we'll head to where we're heading. even if I've avoided the malacha of bishul, so let's say we're going to be warming. The next thing we want to talk about is okay. So it's fully cooked. And it's solid, okay, so it's not going to be a problem with bishul to warm it, but there still are issues in terms of is it isadra button, I still have to negotiate. And that's what we're going to talk about, that's what we're talking about next. But again, just to sketch out where we are so far, and I'd be glad to stop for questions, there is a malacha d'oraisa of bishul. The typical way to avoid bishul, if I'm heating food on Shabbos, is if it's a combination of fully cooked and dry, so then I have the principle of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul. There are ways of dealing with warming liquids as well, which we'll get to hopefully at the end. We'll talk about baby bottles and so on and so forth. But my basics of the simplest solution to looking at solutions, simple solution is, well, if it's dry and fully cooked, then I'm in the clear because it's already cooked. Just in terms of the question of what's dry and what's liquid, this is always a sticky point, right? So the chicken, I mean, it's dry, sort of. It's moist. Like, where you draw the line? You mean like bone dry? I mean, challah is dry, hopefully. And your challah is not dripping wet. You have condensation on the challah, you gotta use very Ziploc bags. But that's sometimes the thing. I go, okay, Rabbi, tell me I should come ask you Shabbos, but I'm not coming to knock on your door every Shabbos morning to with my pan of chicken. Should I warm this or not warm this? So there is a variety, there is a range of Shitas among the poskim, how wet is wet. I think the dominant view is a little bit of liquid that adheres to the surface of the food is certainly fine. Once you're dealing with pools of liquid in the bottom of the pan, even if it's mostly solid, but I think the dominant view in poskim is once there are like pools, like, you know what I'm talking about, you have the pan of chicken, and there's liquid on the bottom, there's chicken on top, but you have a quarter of an inch, eighth of an inch of liquid on the bottom, puddles of liquid on the bottom, that's already a problem. But if everything is solid, it's not dry, it's not desert dry, there may be liquid on the surface of the chicken, but there are no pools of liquid, no puddles of liquid in the bottom, so that's assumed to be dry enough that we would apply the rule of Ein Bishul Achar Bishul, and you could comfortably take that pan of chicken and put it in a place where it's mutter to warm food on Shabbos. So you have your potato kugel. So if there's a pool of oil, the depression has sort of collapsed a little bit, and like this puddle of oil, pool of oil, so that's You can make a culinary decision what you're going to do with it, but you cannot warm that on Shabbos. I mean, you can warm it on Erev Shabbos and serve it Friday night. But if it's just, it's a regular potato pillow. So some people have a little drier, some a little moist. It's a moist potato pillow, but it's not like their own, you know, puddles or pools of liquid. So that's yavesh enough, that's dry enough, that you can comfortably rewarm that in a permitted fashion on Shabbos morning. Yeah, questions?
What if you're at someone's house and you see that they take out the pan of meat, sliced meat with a ton of juices on the bottom.
And put it on top.
No.
And everything is nice and warm.
They're serving here. Could you put the meat on the platter for me? And, like, can you tell your family they shouldn't eat that? Like, privately?
Can you hand it on from Arab Shabbos?
No.
I would think it would be a great idea to eat that meat without additional gravy.
So you could just take from the top.
If you have a pan,
right.
I would say two things. Number one, there is, as I mentioned before, there's a machlokas haposkim where you draw the line in terms of wet and dry.
Right. I saw like the pan was.
Right. So there is a minority view, but a legitimate minority view that if it's majority solid, you can rewarm it up Shabbos. There is even a view which is rejected in Shulchan Aruch, but there was a view in Rishonim 700 years ago. There were those who said that in Bishul Achar Bishul applies to gravy and soup also. Now, and this is an incredibly important point that comes up. The Mishnah Berurah quotes for Prima Gadol in every number of pages the following idea, that although the Gemara does say that at times, if a Jew violated Shabbos, so he or she and perhaps even others are not permitted to benefit from that over the course of Shabbos. That's what's called Ma'aseh Shabbos, the work done on Shabbos. But the Mishnah Berurah keeps quoting that from the Prima Gadim, that that's only in force if what was done is unanimously held to be forbidden. But if someone did something which the accepted view is that that's forbidden, but there are legitimate poskim who hold that it's mutter to do, even though we would not do it, but we wouldn't impose a penalty. So let's say if someone, so since there are Rishonim who say that one's allowed to reheat soup on Shabbos, so I would not tell any of you to, you should not reheat soup on Shabbos. Absolutely not. So the Shulchan Aruch said it's a potential issur d'oraisa. Do not reheat soup on Shabbos. But if someone else did, so I'm allowed to eat that, I can eat that soup. Certainly, if it's a situation where there's food in the pan and there's liquid in the pan, where there are more Rishonim who say, as long as it's roved more than 50% of the salt, that's fine. Again, halacha lamasa, I would tell you, do not. If you have a pan that has meat and it has a quarter inch of gravy, so it is true that it's rove majority solid, do not heat that on Shabbos. Please, do not heat that on Shabbos. But if someone did, you don't have to avoid eating it. But in that case, anyways, the meat, anyways, is certainly fine. The only question is, should they have reheated that? They shouldn't have reheated the gravy. So there, you probably can have the gravy too. And number two is a simple solution, just eat the meat. But in terms of doing it, I would say absolutely not. And once there are pools of liquid, you should not be reheating it. But if someone did, accidentally or on purpose, so that's a situation where it's a machlokas, we paskin lahachamir, but the shita hamekila is relevant for the bidyevit. What happens in terms of picking up the pieces afterwards? I'll give you another example of that phenomenon, and that brings us to the next question of assuming that there's no bishul problems, there's no problem of cooking. It's already it's a dry food and it's fully cooked, but there are drabbanan restrictions on where I can warm things, which we'll get into in a moment. Rav Avadya Yosef was one of the great Sephardi poskim in the 20th century, and had sort of this overall goal of sort of restoring the pride of Sephardim in their heritage, in the Torah heritage, and was therefore a very strong proponent of educating the Sephardi community what have Sephardi poskim said. So he points out that he collects a whole series of Sephardi poskim who think that the blech There's enough of a separation between the fire and the food on Shabbos that you can take cold food out of the fridge and just put on the blech Shabbos morning and move on with my day. So that's true for Shabbos. I was actually just earlier this week discussing that with a Sephardi young man who's a member of the Kol NYU. He says, sure, he does that every Shabbos morning. And he married an Ashkenaziyah girl who now follows the Sephardi Pesachim. So they both take food out of the fridge Shabbos morning, put it on the blech, and they have to remember not to do that when they go to the in-laws. Because his mother-in-law was shocked when she saw that. Mm-hmm. So that's something that Sephardim should follow, that Pesach. Ashkenazim should not. However, if the relevance of that Pesach for Ashkenazim is that if a Jew, Ashkenazi or Sephardi, I mean, inappropriately or appropriately, took cold food out of the fridge, cooked dry food, and warmed it on the blech, I would not advocate to an Ashkenazi to do that. I would tell Ashkenazi not to do that, but if an Ashkenazi did, say, it was wrong to do it, but you're allowed to eat the food. Since Rav Avi Yosef holds that that's something one's allowed to do, so if even Ashkenazi did that, it doesn't make the food problematic. Again, that's an important point, that we differentiate between what we're allowed to do, and there may be activities that we're wrong to do, but will not make the food problematic to serve. Okay, and with that in mind, let's jump back into the question of, so it's not cooking, so it's dry and it's cooked food, so it's not cooking, so what's wrong? Why can't I warm it however I want to? Why can't I just stick it on the blech? Why can't I stick it in the chowl pot? Take a kugel out of the, I have a cold potato kugel in the refrigerator, I'll stick it in, I'll Shabbos morning, why can't I just take the cold kugel, potato kugel, open up the chowl pot, stick the kugel in, and for a couple of hours, the kugel will have a chalenti flavor. What's wrong with that? It's not bishul, right? It's dry, it's fully cooked, ain't bishul acha bishul. What could be wrong? So, Gemara tells us, and Rabbi Neuberger discussed this last time, that Chachamim were also worried about another malacha. The other malacha is adjusting the fire. Because we love food, people love food in general, perhaps Jews have a particular affinity for food. So when it comes to foods, people sometimes forget themselves. And in the desire to have food and to have good food, which as we said before, is not only a natural human desire, but on Shabbos, is a very holy desire, and is it appropriate to want to enhance the Shabbos experience, but you got to make sure you're enhancing the Shabbos experience without violating Melechah Shabbos. So we're caught in a sticky place here, because you're naturally going to want to, all week long, you can tinker with the fire to make sure you have just the right temperature, so that everything lands when it's supposed to land. It'll be hot when I need it hot, and I'll adapt the fire I need it ready in 20 minutes instead of 35 minutes. I'll make it a little hotter. We'll do whatever I have to do to make sure to get my heat so that I get the results that I want. But to do that on Shabbos would be, forget about Bishul, that would be a violation of Havara, of raising a fire. That would be raising a fire, lowering a fire, whatever it is I'm doing to poke around to adjust my heat. So adjusting the heat would be a malacha, because adjusting the heat, if I actually adjusted the heat, if I actually turned that dial, that would be a malacha deraisa. So as a result, the Chachamim, number one, limited how I can set up food to stay on the fire over the course of Shabbos. That's what I knew we spoke about last time. The Chachamim imposed even stricter restrictions on putting stuff onto the fire on Shabbos. And Rabbi Avitam points out, because look, if I'm leaving the food on the fire from Erev Shabbos, so I know what I'm getting myself into, and hopefully I'll set the fire properly. Once in a while, maybe I miscalculated. So there's a slight concern, you know, if I'm going to leave the food on without a blech, I may, you know, tinker with the fire and Shabbos. That's why you have to have something to remind you. But a blech solves your problems. Blech is not going to be enough to put food on Shabbos, because there's a much more severe concern that, well, I'm putting the food on now, there's a lot of tinkering I'm going to do. I'm not putting on an Erev Shabbos. So that's why Chachamim were much more machmir in terms of what I can do, in terms of putting food on the fire on Shabbos. So the Chachamim said, you cannot, the core idea of the Isur Drabban around which we need to navigate is you cannot take food and just put it on out of the clear blue sky, put the food al gavei ha'esh, to take food and put it on top of the fire, that's a problem on Shabbos. That leaves me with two solutions. Either I'll put it in a different place, that's not al gavei ha'esh. If it's removed enough from the fire, then maybe I'm okay. Again, assuming that it's fully cooked and dry, so all right, bishul, in terms of tickering the fire, I won't put it al gavei ha'esh. I'll figure out something that's removed enough from the fire. That's one way to go. And if you're following along with the outlines, that's 2A, the safe zones versus hotspots. And there could be zones, there could be areas where I'm allowed to put it, they're not called al gavei ha'esh. The other solution is I'm not going to put it on the fire. I'm not going to put al gavei ha'esh. I'll just return it to the fire. I'll do ha'chazara instead of nesina mechashiv. In other words, if the rain was on the fire, the challah was on the fire, and I just took it off, I'll put it back on. So if I can keep it connected enough, a small enough hefsek, so to speak, I'll sort of just take it off in a way that's heading right back on, so then that would be permitted. Because it's not a fresh start, it's just sort of a little blip. I took it off momentarily, and I'm putting it right back on. So let's talk about that second point first. If it's already on the fire, the shalot was on the fire from before Shabbos. I just want to take it off temporarily, put it back on. As an aside, why am I taking my shalot off the fire? Probably because exactly, because we want to have, either because we're actually hungry or because it's Friday night, and our family were pre-programmed to need to become a circadian rhythm, and Friday night at 10 o'clock we're suddenly hungry for shalot. It's either naturally hungry, artificially hungry, whatever it is, it's all the same. It's all good. Baruch Hashem, onuk Shabbos. As long as there's enough challah for Shabbos for tomorrow, and it will be good. Now, so our practice is we don't stir things that are on the fire. We don't scoop things that are on the fire, even though they're fully cooked, but we see that sort of as a form, a flavor of bishul, you know, the challah is fully cooked. But to start stirring, that the halachic term is hagasa, we avoid hagasa on the fire. So if you want to scoop that challah, you want to take the challah off the fire, scoop while it's off the fire, and then put it back on. Great. So now you're scooping. Your scooping is fine because you're scooping while it's off the fire. The question is about how do I put the challah back on the fire? So to do that, I need a couple of pieces in place. Number one, if I want to put things back, we call that hachazara. I want to return things to the fire. Number one, there better be a blech. There probably is a blech anyways. That's how you left it in the first place. But for putting it back, you certainly need a blech. And again, as I said before, it better be, it can't be bishul. If the challah's not fully cooked, don't touch it, because you didn't. So put it back as real bishul. Okay, the challah is fully cooked. Great. So number one, you want to make sure you have a blech on wherever you're putting the challah back to. You can put it back to the same heat source. You could put it back, if it was on the fire, you could put it back on a different fire. You can move it from the crock pot to the stovetop, from the stove to the crock pot, it's fine. If it was al gavei ha'esh, you can put it back to that ash or some other ash, assuming that your destination is covered. You have a blech or some other sort of cover, aluminum foil over the element, right? We probably spoke last week, that some encourage covering the knobs also. So however you're bleching, you're putting it back onto a covered fire. Number two is you want to keep as I said before, it needs to be sort of just a temporary blip and going right back on, as opposed to this is a fresh putting on. So to do that, you want it to be odo biyado v'dayto l'hachzer, that you're holding it the whole time, and you intended from the outset to put it back. Now, there's physically, it's still connected, and mentally, it's still connected. Physically, still connected. You took it off. You may even have brought it to the table, and you're serving, so you have soup. You have more guests coming later. So you take the soup off the fire, and someone's holding it while you're either scooping it into a tureen, or you're scooping it into bowls, you're bringing it to the table, whatever it is, but someone's holding it the whole time. It's not getting put down, A. That's what we call odo biyado, it's still in your hands, and you mentally intended to put it back, as opposed to I took it off the fire, and then while I'm holding it, someone says, hey, some of our guests haven't shown up yet. Sorry, that's more problematic. So again, what you want in order to do, you find one of the outline 2B, if you want to be able to return it, when I get that in, so I need my destination fire to be blecht, and I need to mentally have intended from the outset to put it back, and physically I'm still holding it as opposed to having put it down. And finally, as I said before, you want to make sure you're avoiding cooking, which means number one, the food is fully cooked. Otherwise, you put it back on, not just, you put it back on without a blech, you put it back on after you put it down, you're dealing with an Issur Drabanan, which is bad. You put it back on, it wasn't fully cooked, dealing with an Issur Daraisa, cooking. Or, remember, if you're walking around with a soup pot and scooping for people, it's unlikely but possible that it cooled down. So obviously, it's unlikely that liquid will have cooled down while you're still holding it. You must be a very patient person if you're holding the soup pot that long. But again, those are the basic things to think about. It better not be bishul, and in terms of the considering to be a permitted return, blecht, still in your hands, and still not put down, and you had mental intent to put it back. So those are the conditions, again, as I said here, that way it's just a return, it's a hachazara, as opposed to a new start. Let's take some questions, and then we'll talk about how can I do a new start. Because again, this only helps, what we talk about until now, is if I want to return it to the fire. It was on the fire, the challenge was on the fire, the soup was on the fire, we're going to take it off and put it back on. What we have not yet dealt with, which we will momentarily, is how to take food out of the refrigerator and warm it up. That's not hachazara. That is warming up afresh. You have to figure out what would be permitted locations for warming up afresh. Questions?
If you're still holding it, you can't put it down?
If you want to put it back on the fire, you need to hold it and not put it down.
So how does one person do that?
Find a friend. It would be better not to put it down on the surface at all. Mishnah Berurah says if you made a mistake, Mishnah Berurah is willing to be makel if you have one of those two conditions, especially the food is significant, is important, which chalent and chicken soup tend to be. Most families that I'm aware of. So he says, b'di'evet, he would allow you to put it back if you at least had one of those two conditions. There's one of those conditions, the fact that you're physically still holding it, mentally intend to put it back, both do the same thing. They both serve to define this as sort of just a continuation of before as opposed to a fresh start. So we would advocate having both conditions. If you messed up and you realize, oops, so then the Mishnah Berurah says he would allow you to put it back even if you have one.
But
no, but holding it really means, sounds like Gemara, holding it probably means holding it as opposed to putting it down something. So that's why the ideal way to do this is with a team. Mm-hmm. If you have one person who holds the challenge, that's the way I've seen in various homes, mine and others, the way you scoop challenge Friday night. Either you have two separate challenge pots, you don't have to worry about this, or you have a team. Good collaboration for worthy goals. You have one person who's the holder. Sometimes you have one person who's the holder, another person who holds the lid, and then you have your third person who's doing the dishing up. It's wonderful, wonderful team.
Why does it need a third person holding the lid? That you can't put down either.
Well, that you could. You just if there's condensation inside, then you might want to wipe and you put it down. You want to wipe it out before
putting back up.
Exactly.
Yeah. Does it have to be put back on before you replace it also?
It would be better to. We try to avoid stirring, and we also try to avoid putting on lids. Right. So the best would be you take it off, you uncover it, you scoop out, put the lid back on, and then it goes back on. Yeah.
Sometimes I put a chicken soup inside the crock pot, and I'll put it up before Shabbos. And Friday night I do it, or Shabbos morning I notice that the water has gone down. If I want to add more water to it, like from the urn, it's really hot. Even if my husband helps me, you have to put it down, because even holding it with the oven mitts and then putting hot water, like I have the cup of boiling water from the urn.
I would recommend, I mean this seriously, I would recommend getting better mitts. And I'm not being sarcastic, I'm being serious. In other words, there probably are better mitts you can get that would help you. And that's probably your best.
You can't even put it down.
It would be better not to. Okay. That's what definitely I recommend. Now, if you talk about an ongoing situation, not a one-time emergency situation, so I would say, if ongoing situation, say, get better, you know, go invest in better mitts, look up a Travis, and...
Or if you want to add water to the
chalons
or something.
Right, so you want to add water to the chalons, is the example we were talking about before, that I can do hachazara, I can take something off of one fire, and either put it back on the same one, as long as I have these conditions in place, or put it back on a different fire. So I could have water that was on the urn, which is al gavei ha'esh, because there's an element there that's keeping it hot. Right. I could take water out of the urn and put it into the chalom pot, and then put the chalom pot back on the fire, because that's how I'm doing hachazara of that water, taking the water out of the urn. Instead of pouring it back into the urn, I'll pour it into the chalom pot, which will go on the...
which is not in the crock pot.
Right, I take the chalom pot out, put the water, hot water from the urn into the chalom pot, and then put it back on.
Hot water.
Yeah, but it's well over. Halachic hot is yatsal esbo. What yatsal esbo is a great question, and the machlokas spans like 50, 60 degrees. But water from an urn is probably well over.
But why do you have to take it out of the if you're allowed to actually do that, what makes you have to take it out if it's already boiled?
Because we try to avoid scooping, adding, and lidding pots while they're on the fire. So that's why I take it off, do whatever I need to do, and then...
I didn't know that. If your chalom's dry in the morning, Shabbos morning, you can take it out and put water from your urn and put it back with the team approach.
Now again, from a culinary perspective, it may not help you. Right, the team approach.
But you shouldn't open the crock pot while it's in the...
No. I would take it off.
Okay, ever, if you wanted to... Okay.
Again, part of what I'm trying to do also, and part of what Chazal was trying to do, is to sort of streamline procedures. And what to do if things didn't go exactly according to plans is a good question, but in terms of your general process, having a streamlined procedure will keep your whole team of people who would like to be helpful truly helpful. If everything is streamlined and simple and basic, you're less likely to encounter problems. From operations research perspective, I think that's the way we want
it. You don't have to put it directly from the urn into the crock pot? There's a cup in between?
How do you do that?
Well, if you pick up the thing,
you
put it
on
there,
and
then
you
just
put it on the
urn. I believe so, yeah.
So you can use a cup.
Yeah. And you know when you're taking the cup. If you have a mug of tea, they say, oh, now let me pour that in. That wasn't Daito Hachazir. But if you know exactly what you're doing, you took the chalom pot off, and you go and take some water out of the urn with intent to put it back into some other fire. So that's legitimate. I'd love to take more questions, but I'd love also to move on a little bit to one final, one or two final areas. I want to be sensitive to everyone's time as well. And I know that you don't want to miss our next topic and maybe even the mini topic at the end. Mini topic, we can talk at the end about the bay bottles and making tea. But our upcoming large topic, again, we're talking about the Issa D'Rabbanan. The midrabanan, even though there's no bishul, even though it's dry cooked food, or it's wet cooked hot food, so there's no problem of bishul, but there will be a problem of putting it, of sticking it al gavei ha'esh. So we said before, one solution is, well, if it's not putting it afresh onto the fire, if I'm just continuing the shahia from before, that'll be fine. And as we said, to do hachazara, to make it a permitted type of hachazara, and it needs to be a blacht destination fire, and the two conditions that create that sense of continuity. The fact that mentally I took it off intending to put it back, and physically, since I took it off, I'm still in my hand and not put down, so it's a very clearly a temporary situation. This is a blip, it's going right back on to continue its stay on the fire. So that's one solution. But that's only, again, if it was on the fire and going back on the fire. But how about if it was not on the fire? It was in my refrigerator. It was in my refrigerator, or it was on the counter. The challah was in a Ziploc bag. And I definitely would not have wanted to leave the challah on the fire from before Shabbos for Shabbos morning. That would be an epic fail. So I left it in safely encased in a Ziploc bag. And half hour before the Suda, I'm going to stick it... start to warm it. So how do I do that? How do I warm the challah and the chicken and the cauliflower? So for that, you need to find the right place. Again, as I said before, it needs to be not a bishul problem. So if it's not fully cooked, then don't warm it on Shabbos morning. Or if it's fully cooked but too liquidy, do not warm it on Shabbos morning. either make sure it's not liquidy or enjoy it cold. Yeah.
Just now was the second time, and I don't know if it was intentional, when you were mentioning about, you know, when you're putting it on to the blech, basically, to warm it, you know, was there liquid, right? So what was the status when you put it on? Is this considered a grumma if, going back to that gravy, so you're not pulling it off, like you said, right? What was happening there? There was no gravy on the bottom.
But there were chunks on the chicken that.
Right, putting aside the sheet, so then it's more, you know, solid than liquid, but just sticking with exactly, you know, this. But the reality exactly wasn't.
Yeah.
But then it drips once it.
Yes, so I believe it says in the Shulchan Aruch that all we care about is the state of the matter when I put it on. If I put it on it solid, even though I know it's going to liquefy, that's fine. I just look at, I believe that's what Shah Shah, just look at its state when I put it on.
Because when they serve it, I'm just saying, like it could be.
Oh, so you say,
you know,
maybe?
It liquefies because you're almost long.
That could be. That's a good point. So let's talk about how do I warm things from the refrigerator. So what I'm looking for is a place which is mutter. The most common place which is mutter is what the Gemara calls kedera al gavei kedera. So if I'm going to put my pot of food, instead of taking the pan of chicken or the challah and sticking it directly onto the fire, or for Ashkenazim, even directly onto a covered fire, I'll put it on top of a pot. So I have my challah pot. Challah pot was there from before Shabbos. And I'll put the challah on top of the challah pot. So that's what we call kedera al gavei kedera. I'm putting the food on top of a pot instead of directly on top of the fire. That is, we paskin perfectly fine. That's why if you're in the market, next time you're in the market for a challah pot, highly recommend the flat tops. As a matter of fact, I'm actually learning a group of...
Amazing savings.
Yes. And there are ways to enhance that as well. There's a group of... there's a chabura I've been learning with in the afternoon in YU, who actually spent much of the year on these halachas, learning them b'yim. And there's a WhatsApp group. Mostly what's sacred is about scheduling chaburas and things like that, but every once in a while there are these things of common interest. So someone shared a picture, I forget what it's called, but someone had this idea to, anything to make money. So a tray that's sized with a sort of little piece of grooves on the bottom to click on top of your chalam pot. So you have, instead of just having the area on top of the chalam pot, now you have, you know, a wider area. I have no idea if it's safe. It looks like it could tip everything over. I have no idea if the heat actually spreads. I don't know. But so I, buyer beware, caveat emptor. But the concept is that how, from a Hilchos Shabbos perspective, it's fine. From a Sakhanas Nefashos perspective, I'm not sure. From a Hilchos Shabbos perspective, now that's Kedera al gavei Kedera. And if you can be, again, creative in the way you can deliver in a safe way, you can sometimes fit a lot of food on top of that. So some of you may be familiar. This was all the rage a couple of years ago. The Kedera blech. So the Kedera blech was basically a very large Kedera gavei Kedera. Instead of just having a flat piece of metal that's not a pot, you had a very wide pan that was the size of your entire stovetop. You fill it with water. The deluxe models had a spout on the faucet built into the side, so it's a legitimate kedera that I could actually make use of that. Well, I could use the water for tea over the course of Shabbos, and I could put whatever food I want to on that kedera. And it has two, the practical advantage of it is that it apparently makes for an even heating surface, even if you only leave one or two fires on, the water over the course of time spreads the heat evenly. And from a halachic perspective, if you have a wide pan of water, that actually accessible water, you would plan to actually use some of over the course of Shabbos while you have the spout, so then you can put any fully cooked dry food can go on top. It's one big challah pot. That's absolutely legitimate. So that's solution number one is al gavei kedera. Put it on top of the kedera. Solution number two,
you could put it on top of the urn also.
If you have a flat top urn, yeah. Right. If you have a flat top, or you put on top of it, right? Maybe if you can find, maybe there'll be a market for wide, shallow urns. I guess that's the way to what the Kedera Bluff is.
Are you allowed to lift the cover of the urn?
Or the chalom pot.
Or the chalom
pot. Or of the chalom pot.
Invert it.
To invert it so that it's flat. To put something on.
Yes, because that's, even if there's condensation, you take it off and you put it back on. That's, oh, do you have that last year? Put it right back on. That's totally fine. Sure, sure. Absolutely.
If it's a round one, you can use the bottom of a springform pan also in that blackness.
Can you take the cover off and put the fluid on top of the
chalom? Let's just get back to both questions for a moment. Taking the cover off, so we try to avoid covering, stirring or covering pots while they're on the fire. So I think what I said before, we would prefer not to take the lid off and put it back on Shabbos. The chalom, we take the chalom pot off the fire before we take the lid off and put it back on. In urn, you don't have that option. So you could set up that way from before Shabbos. I think we would probably try to avoid taking lids off and putting lids back on an urn on Shabbos, which might play into this as well. What you might want to do is set it up from before. If that's the way you want to go, set it up, put a pan before Shabbos, take the lid off, and put whatever pan you want to use as your urn cover there, so the Shabbos morning it's waiting for you. So that's one safe zone. Is the most useful safe zone is going to be Algabe Kedera. Safe zone number two. It appears in Shulchan Aruch, not sure you're necessarily going to get a lot of practical use of it unless your fire is particularly hot, is Samach La'esh. If I have a stove top here, and the fire is on here, I'm allowed to put food on the counter next to the fire. That's not Al Gavah
La'esh. Can you run liquid in the food?
No, because Bishul is a problem. Remember, this whole notion of Al-Gabe Ha'esh as opposed to off the fire is only relevant to the Issud Rabbanon of putting warming cooked food. If you're dealing with actually cooking things, like reheating liquids or raw food, then
even
no matter how you get the heat.
Next to it, it doesn't matter. So if you're putting it next to it, it doesn't matter. Like you can't take your meat with a little liquid.
Yeah, that's not
put it near correct. On your counter. That's
correct. If it's going to get to the outside as well, it's a problem. But if you have,
what if it's just going to be warm?
Yeah, it's
just
going to be warm.
Yeah, it's not going to get to the outside.
To put it in a place,
room temperature.
To put something in a place that it, even if you left it there for hours and hours and hours, it would never reach Yatzel Esbo. So that's totally fine with anything. That's not visual. But to put it on a spot on the counter next to the fire, where if I leave it there long enough, it will eventually get to Yatzel Esbo, get over 120 degrees. So then I can't put raw food. I cannot put cold liquids, but I can put cold cooked solid food there. That's not Al-Gabe Ha'esh. On top of a kedera is not Al-Gabe Ha'esh. On the counter is not Al-Gabe Ha'esh. That does not work on a blech. That's the position of most poskim, Moshe Feinstein, and others. Once you have a piece of metal covering your whole stovetop, so we would avoid putting it on any hot spot on the blech, even if it's not directly over the fire. But if you're on a counter, on a countertop next to the fire, that is not Al-Gabe Ha'esh. Now, the big question often comes up is, how about my warming drawer? How about my
hot plate,
a non-adjustable hot plate?
So, or putting something over the flap, like flipping a pan.
So both of those are debated by Poskim. If I can, again, we're talking not about Friday night. We're talking about Shabbos morning. Take cold food out and stick in. Do I consider those better than a blech? Is that like Kedera Al-Gabe Kedera? That's a safe zone. Or is it a forbidden hotspot? So right, Neuberger's position on both of those is that both of those are problematic. In line with, in terms of the plata, it's the non-adjustable hot plate, that's in line with the position of Ritzi Pesach Frank and Rosh Hashanah Zalman Arbach, that the non-adjustable hot plate is like a fire which has a blech on it. So you can leave things on it from before Shabbos, but you can't take, his position is like those poskim, you cannot take cold food from the fridge and put it, warm it on a non-adjustable papa. It's a big machlokes haposkim. That's Rabbi Neuberger's approach. And in terms of the warming drawer, there's an additional concern that he has, the number of poskim have, including Rabbi Neuberger, about the many of the warming drawers. It's hard to open it will often open it will often turn the elements on. So that's an additional concern. So Neuberger would not advise using either of those on Shabbos morning. If you want to leave food on your, if you want to leave the fire off because it's June and it's July and it's hot, so you'd rather have a non-adjustable hot plate instead of leaving a fire on the blech to use it to leave to warm food from before Shabbos. That definitely works. And the Halakos HaPoskim, in which Neuberger follows the approach of the Sefer Shlomo Zalman and Ritzi Pesach Frank, but Hachamir is not to use it on Shabbos morning. If you see people who do it, so don't throw rocks. No one don't throw rocks in general.
There's no way to do it.
You can't put a cookie sheet on top of your left. Now, some people look surprised. Some people look agitated. Some people look shocked.
Yes.
Don't worry, I'm not about to say time is up. I'm going. Worry not. But because I'm sensitive to time, I wanna get back to the point.
So what can you do? Also, can you use a warming drum Friday night because of that? Because you open it up and there'll be the elements will go up. That's another question if you want to know.
So let me speak first to those who are shocked. I see a couple of shocked faces of people who have lived in Riverdale. So that's rather willing, as I said before, there's the machlokas haposkim on both issues. The use of the warming drawer, to allow use of a warming drawer on Shabbos is a more rare position. To allow use of the non-adjustable hot plate on Shabbos morning is a more common position. Willig happens to be make on both. A warming drawer, he has a whole solution for how he wants you to fudge the warming drawer knobs before Shabbos. But the hot plate is a, as I said, as I said before, there are plenty of posts on both sides. So if you're surprised because someone else told you that's mutter, that's not surprising. It is a big machlokes haposkim. I would be surprised if someone told you you're allowed a warm, cold soup on Shabbos morning. That shita has been out of vogue for the last 700-800 years. But the non-adjustable hot plate with or without the inverted pan. So that is a machlokes haposkim. There's certainly our postman who say no, the non-adjustable hot plate is the same as the kedera al gabe kedera. And their poskim say that it is not. So that's why I was saying before, big machlokes haposkim. And Rabbi Neuberger's position is that it's not the same as kedera gabe kedera. If you're surprised because someone else told you otherwise, that's not surprising. There are poskim on both sides of the issue. I'd love to take one or two more questions at the same time. Again, if everyone wants to stay for another 2 hours, I'm glad to stay. But I imagine that it's probably not the case. What I want to do, I would love to take one or two questions right now, and then Chloe, I'd like to briefly just speak about bottles and tea, and then I'm glad, and then we'll officially end the shiur. I'm glad to hang around afterwards for more questions, but that way whoever wants to stay can stay, who wants to go and go. So that's another question or two. Yeah?
Put sauce on your blech, your non-adjustable hot plate, before Shabbos. Take your chicken or your meat out of the fridge, put it on a counter separate, and then pour on Shabbos the hot sauce on the fully cooked dry chicken. It's been on since Friday before Shabbos.
Absolutely fine. Right, to leave sauce on a blech from before Shabbos is fine, or to leave sauce on a non-adjustable hot plate from before Shabbos is certainly fine.
But isn't that someone might think that you didn't do that?
Make an announcement. It's a good conversation. It's a good way to introduce different territory to the table. and to raise awareness.
So, Rabbi, the only thing you can use now is an adjustable hot plate?
I don't know. I just don't know.
No.
No. No. Can't use the,
again.
You can't use the inverted now.
Again. Right, Neuberger's position.
That's what I mean. Right?
And Neuberger's position that the two usable places to warm things are either algabe kedera, which is either on top of your chalon pot, on top of your urn, or on top of your kedera blech, if you want to invest in one, or on top of your pan that's attached to the top of your chalon pot, again, if you're comfortable with that, or alongside, that is on the counter, alongside the fire. Those two are both certainly legitimate places to warm things. On top of a non-adjustable warming plate is a machalik zaposkim, or a Neuberger's approach is like that of Chief Pesach and Shlomo Zalman to avoid that. Yes.
Yes.
So what's the status of the next food, like a cheese casserole or something with cheese? And I guess what I'm asking is, can you, on whatever you're allowed to heat on, can you melt cheese? Is cheese more like a solid? Or is cheese more like a liquid? And does it matter if the cheese has already been cooked into a casserole or if it's just raw? Does that change anything? I'm just wondering how you treat cheese.
You cannot, right, raw, that's an interesting point. Cheese is raw. And most cheeses are not cooked in the course of their processing. So to melt cheese on Shabbos is potentially a malacha bishul min haTorah.
What if you cooked it into a kugel that you've worked on, so that's different, melted, but now it's solidified because it's cold. That's fine.
Even if it's gonna, right? That's like gravy. If it's solid and you put it on, I believe you're fine. One more question, and then I said before we got to stay for questions after.
According to the poskim who allow the electric hot, non-adjustable hot plate, is it make a difference if you have inverted tins on it or not, or that doesn't?
It's probably not necessary. It might be necessary from a culinary perspective, because otherwise the bottom of your chal is going to burn. But, yeah. Okay. Again, I'll be glad to stay for more questions afterwards. But at the same time, I would love to...
We need another share. So how do you warm up food on cabinets?
I'm not sure. Let's talk about this more after. Okay, let me leave you two practical kulos. And I'm glad to stay for questions after. Number one, and then here we get back to the world of Bishul. We started with the world of Bishul. We spoke about, we said, assuming it's fully cooked and it's dry, or it's fully cooked liquid but still warm, there's not a Bishul problem. And then we spoke about, how am I going to navigate the Issa Drabbanan of putting things al gabei ha'esh on Shabbos. But let's end by going back to Bishul. Is there ever a solution to Bishul if it's not dry or warm? Cold water in my fridge, and I want to make a bottle for the baby. So how am I going to handle that on Shabbos? Or how am I going to make tea on Shabbos? Yeah, the water is hot, the problem is the tea bag. So the solution with the baby bottle, there's more than one solution. And it goes back to the fact that this is sort of a whole other set of, the whole other dimension to Bishul. So we've been talking until now, Bishul only applies if the food is either raw or liquid. But in order to accomplish Bishul, you also have to be using, either has to be direct contact with the fire, or you're using something which is at least related to the fire. So it would be Bishul for me to stick raw food into the chalon pot on the fire. Right? It would also be vishal for me to take the chalon pot off, but that's the stuff that was still had been directly heated by the fire. That's what we call the kli rishon. So it's still in the original container, the original pot, the original pan that was on fire. That's a real bishul problem. Once you move your hot liquid, your hot stuff out of the original container, so I'm going to pour out the urn as a kli rishon. But if I'm going to pour water from the urn into a bowl, pour water from the urn into a washing cup, whatever it is, so now that the hot water landed in a new home, in a new container, that's what we call a kli sheni. And again, I want to just focus on these two examples. Water, like the water in the baby bottle, or liquids in general, typically only cook in a kli rishon. So to take the baby bottle and stick it into the urn or stick it into a kettle, that's a problem. But to pour water, out and stick it into kli sheni, that is totally fine. We sometimes we wouldn't do it with an egg, because an egg would probably cook in a mug of hot water. But certainly to cook liquids that way is fine. To warm liquids that way is fine. So I'm allowed to warm, as hot as it gets, I'm allowed to warm the baby bottle in the hot water that's no longer in the urn. So that's number one. What we do with tea is a great question. There's a wide range of opinions in terms of that. I do not know what Neuberger's approach is. I do know that Rabbi Shechter's approach, which is what we do at home, is to assume that just because you're making tea doesn't mean that you're cooking the tea leaves. In other words, you can make tea in cold water also. It just would take longer. If you put it in overnight, you'll get tea. The fact that the tea diffuses into the water doesn't mean you cook the tea leaves. And certainly, Rabbi Shechter assumes that tea will not cook in a kli sheni. So that's why you will find poskim here. You might be surprised in the other direction, because you've heard those who said that our poskim assume that tea is soft leaves and it's very susceptible to cooking, and you're going to need a kli shlishi or avoid it altogether, make your tea in advance, make concentrate. Rabbi Shechter's approach is you pour the water from the urn into the mug, and then feel free to stick the tea into the mug afterwards. So again, once again, you will find a variety of opinions. That's what I would personally recommend, is you can stick the tea bags into a kli sheni. There are those who prefer that being a kli shlishi. That's where you'll have the two mug approach. And you know, those who are not even comfortable with a kli shlishi, which is why you'll have the hot essence you then dilute into water. Okay, so we had a chance once again. We had a chance to discuss quite a bit. As I said before, we discovered we were going to cover, I promised you we would cover principles and practical cases, and I hope we did that. Some surprises maybe in both directions, and some hopefully just simple clarification. And as I said before, if there was a lot of material, that's fine. There's a lot more where that came from, and that's fine too. And this is hopefully makes us more intelligent consumers, gives us practical approach to specific situations, gives us a sort of an intelligent, more sophisticated way of thinking about other situations we come across, and allows us to continue the conversation. I'm glad to stick around for questions tonight. And if you didn't think of your question tonight, please do ask. Catch either of us, pick up the phone, and look forward to questions now and in the future. Once again, I want to thank the Fervors for opening their home. I want to thank the Rubens for making this possible. I want to thank each and every one of you for braving the post-storm weather to come at her. I hope it was useful. Thank you so much. Thank you. Good Shabbos and a good Yom Tov. And I'm glad to hang around for questions.